The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And good morning, everybody. It is the ninth day of April 2021. If you're just hopping in the car, your timing is excellent, or going back into the Wayback Machine, not that far way back, just yesterday, about 9:15, 9:20 in the morning, the moment at which George P. Bush decides in the middle of our conversation to just give it to Attorney General Ken Paxton with both barrels and come about this close to announcing a primary challenge of him. The Texas primaries are March 1st, so the announcement's going to have to come at some point pretty soon. So how would that even shape up? We're taking a look at that, various Biden Second Amendment nonsense, stories from the week gone by. And I got to tell you, this very day, one of my favorite bands, which of course means it has its roots somewhere in the 1970s, has a brand new album. And it's like, ouch, because sometimes that gets a little awkward. Bands get a little long in the tooth. You get the feeling like maybe these guys should have stayed with the glory days. And, you know, I mean, there are many, many bands I love that I just don't need new music from. But there's one outfit that's cranked out a brand new album. And the only thing standing between me and playing a little bit of that for you is the proclamation that it's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I would not.
So good. So good. I got a year. Wow.
Here comes the summer. The summer.
That's Rick Nielsen on the guitar. That's Robin Zander on the vocals, kids. There's a new Cheap Trick album.
Yellow and beige shines through the haze. The holidays wait for you.
Summer looks good on you.
It's holiday. I'll take you away. Summer looks good on you.
Brand new Cheap Trick album is called In Another World. A release date? Today. Love these boys. Alrighty, so there we go. Cheap Trick, In Another World, released today, available wherever you download things. Alrighty, a whole lot of people downloaded this yesterday. We put the podcast up right after the show, and everybody went clamoring for the portion of our 9 o'clock hour where George P. Bush at the end, it looked like the end, we then went a few minutes long, decided to just blast Attorney General Ken Paxton in what appears to be a precursor toward running against him in what would be a real Clash of the Titans primary, which doesn't tend to happen. Our Republican leaders in Texas don't tend to get primaried by anybody who actually has a chance of winning, or anybody that actually has that much of a resume or that much of a war chest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if George P. was in the mood to riff on what his motivations might be, I figured let's let him.
He's been in public service now for over 20 years. And I'm not sure another 4 years is going to bring Texans anything better. You know, from my perch in Austin, I've seen some high quality attorneys leave that office. I've visited with many conservative attorneys general throughout the country. They're embarrassed by the conduct. And I think Texans deserve better.
That's at this point that I found myself thinking, oh, really? Who would those Republican attorneys general, and that is the plural, like courts, martial, mothers-in-law, attorneys general. Who is it that's gotten with George P. and said, well, that Paxton man, he's a problem. And he's not going to tell me because those are confidential, and I totally get that. So since that's something you're not going to be able to divulge, he's about to mention sheriffs have been bagging on Paxton as well. I mean, is that something you – if it's true, should you say it? Sure. Since you're not going to be able to divulge who you're talking about – I don't know. This kind of thing makes me a little uncomfortable. But
we need a top cop that the law enforcement of our great state can confide in, can trust in, know that they have their back. When I visit with sheriffs throughout the state, they tell me the same thing. And so, it's something I'm looking at, but haven't made a decision. An announcement will be forthcoming.
No, understand. I don't necessarily. Who's a sheriff who's complained about Paxton and why?
Well, I can't name names because I've asked for confidentiality.
I understand.
But a lot of them do have their concerns about the conduct.
Okay, so if I can compartmentalize, if they're there for those new to the state or whatever, there are just all kinds of charges about Ken and things that are in court about licensing and securities and things like that. But your criticism goes deeper. It goes to his actual dispatch of his job. So I can focus on that for just a second, then I'll let this go and figure out what you're – and feel free to announce on this show if that day comes. and I'm guessing it might. What are the things procedure – because it seems like every time he's on the show – it's the latest thing he's doing for voter fraud. It's the latest thing that he's doing for borders. It's the latest thing. What, in terms of the politics and the job itself, in what way has Mr. Paxton been wanting?
Well, this campaign is less about conservative credentials. I mean, we're all conservative. We all supported Donald Trump.
Pause. Do verb tenses mean anything? He didn't say this campaign would be about something, or if I run, this campaign would be. He said this campaign is. Just saying, might be a Freudian slip. Don't overanalyze.
There's really no separation there. It's about how you run an office. Mm-hmm. And that's what's troubling, is that eight of his top lieutenants, who are known and respected conservative members of the Texas Bar, who've distinguished themselves also outside of the state of Texas, because a lot of conservative AGs look to the AG in Texas to lead a lot of these pieces of litigation that are important.
A word about these eight people who bolted. Maybe it's something about the Trump White House, the Trump term, that gave me a very jaded view of people who leave. And I don't mean I'm instantly skeptical. I mean, if let's say you're running an attorney general's office, or you're running a White House, or you're running anything, and a bunch of people, you know, have a hissy fit and leave. One of two things is true. Either something terrible happened to them, they are righteously indignant, and they just couldn't bear the environment one moment more, and they were right to hit the door. Or they're just whiny babies who are disgruntled ex-employees. I have absolutely no idea which is the case with these eight attorneys in Paxton's office who accused him of illegally using his office to interfere with an FBI investigation into a campaign donor. I have no idea. So I'm not going to say either way. But that's apparently a big point that George P. is going to use, which, by the way, he has every right to use. All right, more on this in a second. Calls about it in on the fly. 866-660-5759. We are in Roanoke. Ben, happy Friday. How are you?
Pretty good, Mark Davis. Hey. I just want to tell you, when the primary comes up, I will do everything in my power to make sure George P. Bush does not win the race.
What, based on what?
I'll keep Ken Paxton in there because he's a member of the Bush family. If there's anybody we should never put back in the office of the great state of Texas, yeah, it's those carpet-bagging Bushes. First off, simple, they're all blackmailed, probably by Epstein. We don't know. But the point is, I'd rather have Ken Paxton, who actually legitimately went after that lady in San Antonio for voter fraud, than I ever have for Jeb's idiotic son. Just absolutely.
So, listen. If you got observations to make about Bush 41, Bush 43, and Jeb, they're probably observations that I've made. You are totally unsold. I mean, actually, in a couple of minutes, you're going to hear. I ask him about this. It's like, how are you the only member of the family that not only tolerates Trump but appreciates him? You give no credibility to that whatsoever. You think we're being hosed by George P.
Could you ever trust a Bush for 5 seconds?
Did yes, he? Of course I could. Of course I could.
He is not commented at all.
I'm sorry. He made sure
to stay out of the public light.
Okay, back up. I'm sorry. I spoke over you. I apologize. What was your reference a moment ago?
George W. Bush did absolutely minimal when Limbaugh died. They don't respect conservatives.
The hell do you need George W. Bush to deal on Limbaugh's death? That's a very specific weaponized. I mean, George W. is a private citizen. Who cares?
Yeah, you know what? When the whole time he was in office, the only person defending him was conservative talk radio.
That is true.
He did not defend himself.
That is, and now we're talking. And when the economy melted down, and it's my total brag day. I apologize for the way this sounds. When I'm sitting in the Oval Office, which I was incredibly blessed to do, with my friend Mike Gallagher and a bunch of other talk show guys, in January of 2009, in the closing days of the Bush White House, and you don't go to the White House and beat up the president in his house for stuff he did that wasn't conservative enough. But we did kind of ask, as the economy was, you know, slipping into the toity bowl, and all these people were telling him that you've got to do this, you got to do that, you got to suspend the economy, you got to do all these various shutdowns and various this and that. And they just didn't seem conservative. They just didn't seem particularly conservative. And now there are big parts of both Bush presidencies that did not particularly seem conservative. And those observations are correct. Ben, thanks. Question I have, and the question George P. is going to be thinking about, is what am I to be judged by what my dad Jeb and my uncle George W. and my granddad Bush 41? Is everybody in the family exactly the same? You know, well, Donald Trump and Mary Trump are a little different, aren't they? So I don't know. I'm going to take George P. at face value. And in fact, we wind up talking about this here in just a little bit.
And so when you see these allegations that they have filed through, whether it's the Texas Whistleblower Act, whether it's the FBI investigation and the allegations there, it's more about that. That's concerning. And so this is, when you talk about the words public trust, when you talk about the vows that we make to our Constitution, to our communities, to our churches, to our wives, I mean, these have to matter at some point.
Gotcha.
Ideology is important. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And Ken has been a conservative, and there's no doubt about it. But in terms of how you personally run an office, I think it matters a lot. I think character matters, and I think integrity matters.
So if you wind up challenging him in the primary, it won't so much be about ideology or agenda. It'll be about the practice of the office. It'll be about ethics. It'll be about the charges that are still hanging from the rafters.
Absolutely. Okay. You know, you can't, you know, when you pick up the paper, yes, there's good lawsuits, there's good ideology and filings, but it's about how you run an office, it's about how you lead, and it's about how you're a role model for children and for members of the Texas Bar.
All right, let me pause. When I come back, I have, on the last gentleman's concerns, I talked to George P. about the instant differences that have been recognized over the years about his opinion about Donald Trump, whom he actually supports, and the rest of his family that hated Trump's guts. I asked him about that. You'll hear it next, 8:21. All right. So having made a goodly amount of news there as George P. goes after Paxton and coming about as close as you can come to announcing a primary challenge against the AG, I thought I began to think of the commodity that is George P. Bush. And as we just heard from a caller, the Bush family brings some positives and some negatives. And it's clear that George P. has just flat out distant. And I don't mean emotionally distanced or attitudinally distanced, but he's just a different type of Bush, especially with regard to the one thing that we've talked about the Bush family about for the last few years, and that's their opinions on Trump. and you have been a way more Trump tolerant, even Trump appreciative, than, shall we say, other members of the family. If I had Dad on the phone or Uncle George W., listen, I'm not looking to change anybody's mind, or, you know, not everybody in the family has to speak with one voice. But after a few months of Biden, you think even they might be a little nostalgic for the last president?
Absolutely. I think so. I mean, look, it's about, in the instance of Trump, the comparisons to what the alternative was. And that's what I've always explained to my family. And that's what I've explained to my constituents. And going back to 2016, I was looking up some old, you know, newspaper articles for when Trump sewed up the Republican nomination, mm-hmm. starting here in Texas. You know, I jumped out in support of his run before most of the establishment even jumped on board. I thought it was important when I was running Texas Victory, and for your listeners, Texas Victory is the effort that's run by the state party to go out and elect people up and down the ballot and to get new conservatives to the ballot box. And I thought it was important to get people mobilized, and it was a historic year. I mean, Trump won by double digits in Texas. We kept all of our statewide positions, maintained super majorities in the Senate, picked up seats in the House. I mean, it was a rock star year. And in 2020, even though we didn't get the verdict that we won at the top of the ballot, it was still a good night for conservatives. So my opinion is, let's capture that enthusiasm that's in the grassroots for President Trump, and let's follow on the issues that he's talked about: ballot integrity, skepticism of free trade agreements, taking on China, securing our borders. I mean, those are the issues that get people excited. So let's continue that.
The running joke around Thanksgiving was, what's it like at the Bush family? Did Dad or Uncle George ever get with you and go, dude, you're killing us? I mean, and not in so many words. It's like, you know, because they just didn't like the man. And was that, and listen, families have political things. Was there ever, and I don't need to pry into family conversations, but was it ever an issue?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, look, my dad and my uncle and my grandfather, before he passed, obviously were steeped in politics, and they know it's a tough sport, you know, and you get knocked down quite a bit. The scrutiny is intense a lot of times, but at the end of the day, you know, we love each other and their family, so that matters more. But they understand where I'm coming from, and they know my passion and my beliefs, and that I'm my own man, and they've always supported my races, and look forward to counting on it in the future.
And that future may contain, in news made about 23 hours ago on this show, a run by George P. Bush right there against Attorney General Ken Paxton. 60 seconds of analysis on that, and we'll pause, and we've got stuff to do, topics to do, guests to welcome. How big a star you are doesn't matter. Ask Kay Bailey Hutchison, right? She ran against Rick Perry for governor, and she got smoked. Was that because we didn't like Kay, didn't love Kay, didn't hold her in high regard? Not at all. People didn't want to fire Rick Perry. This entire race for Attorney General of George P. Bush versus Ken Paxton, if that happens, will be the answer to one question. Are Texas Republicans wanting to fire Ken Paxton? If that answer is yes, and George P. is your nominee. If it's not, then all the money and family legacy and I got to tell you, George P.'s compelling separation from his family's recent legacy of Trump hatred, I don't think you can fake that. This is George P. is a different kind of Bush. I believe him. Will that matter? The answer is not if Texas Republicans are not ready to fire Ken Paxton. I talk to Ken all the time. I talk about the issue all the time. Ken's had a bunch of stuff hanging over his head. It's gone. All of it has gone precisely nowhere. Does that mean there's nothing to it? No, but it means it's gone precisely nowhere. Is that likely to change in the next 11 months? I don't know that it is. Now, was his race in 2018 a lot closer than his race in 2014? Yes, it was. But I think a lot of that was the Beto flash in the pan. So it makes life a little more interesting. I have no idea how that race might go, but it sure looks like it's going to happen. Oh, for his part, Ken Paxton's office put out
a release that essentially said, you know, Ken is interested in going after big tech and going after borders and protecting Texans. And it's a shame that a potential opponent has chosen to go after the narratives that the liberals have been using against Ken. So that was, for his part, the Paxton office statement about that. All righty. It is 8:32. Speaking of Texas politics, let's talk to State Senator Kelly Hancock. Interesting bill making its way through the pipeline and various other obviously interesting things going on. He'll join us next. Mark Davis, 660 AM. The answer, it's 8:33. Whoopsie daisy, I got too many things rolling at the one time. Pump it up, there we go. Lose old podcasts, bring back Fleetwood Mac. There we go. Technology is our friend. My laptop was just enjoying yesterday's 9 o'clock hour so much that it just kept playing it. George P., other guests on election security. Well, I tell you what, the podcast machine will enjoy this hour as well, because here at 8:40, we say hi to State Senator Kelly Hancock. Welcome, sir. How are you doing, sir?
We're doing great. Thanks, Mark.
Very nice to have you. Anytime we have anybody state legislature on, we kind of ask the broad question of how are things going? What's on your mind? But there is a particular story of a particular bill that passed yesterday overwhelmingly, and it had to do with COVID liability, a pandemic liability protections. We've all been locked down in various ways, some states more than others, some states less than others. But there are concerns that business owners and employees have as they begin to open up. I've thought about this a lot. I've wondered what the landscape and what the marketplace is going to be like as businesses say, hey, everybody, come on back to work. As employees go, man, I can't wait to get back to work. Or, wow, do I even want to go back to work? And I remember asking a number of people, isn't this an atmosphere that's just rich for a litigious society? A lot of lawsuits and concerns. So describe for me what the concerns were and then what the bill does.
Well, let's start with your point. I mean, we've already seen 650 lawsuits filed in the state of Texas relating to COVID, and they vary literally across the board in industries. So during the interim, the questions that you had, Mark, were the same things that literally everyone I spoke to, whether it be healthcare workers or, you know, restaurants, you know, you just go through it. This was the number one question during the interim is, hey, are we going to have protections? Because, of course, as we typically see, the federal government talked about it, but they didn't do anything about it. And so it was one of our top priorities. You know, it was a low bill number, which means it was a top priority with Lieutenant Governor. It was on the emergency item by the governor. And so we began working on this very, very early during the interim, and we wanted to make sure we got a huge cross-sections. I will tell you, the first draft that we had did not include churches. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. We passed the out of the Senate a constitutional amendment to make sure our churches were essential and protected, to make sure they could open, but we wanted to protect them against any type of litigation as well, so we added them to the bill. And then we literally, you know, what we did want to do is protect bad actors, so we actually worked with the Trial Lawyers Association. That's why you kind of saw the vote that you had. So we found a really good balance of protecting our businesses and our churches and our healthcare workers and our first responders, as well as making sure that, you know, if there are bad actors out there, that the door is still open in order to address those issues.
Let's talk about what sort of the lawsuits were. They were, as you said, of a variety of types, but these 650 or so lawsuits, was there a common thread around most of them? What kind of suits were being filed by whom and to achieve what?
Well, they were pretty diversified, Mark, in different areas, and some it was employers and some it was customers and in different areas. So it was a cross-section, and it really did, with the 650, kind of cross different industries and different areas. And, you know, some, I'm sure, will be legitimate, and we saw some in studying for this, we saw that there were some bad actors. We saw businesses were in the meatpacking plants, you know, where they were making wagers on how many people would come down with COVID. Well, you know, that's not appropriate. We're not doing that. And so we did see some cases that were pretty didn't deserve protection, and we wanted to make sure we struck that balance. But it was really a cross-section, which is why, I mean, literally, you know, it didn't matter who I was talking to industry-wise, this came up, even, you know, at our own church, the issue came up because, as you pointed out, we want businesses to open up. And we knew early on as Chair of Business and Commerce, to get our economy back, we have to make sure businesses and churches and all parts of our society have those safeguards to know that they're not going to spend what is very, very precious resources after a year of a pandemic on litigation that in some cases is just frivolous.
So were there examples of employees filing suit against employers saying, I want to come back to work, but you guys are just not careful enough where I feel safe enough?
I am not aware of the specifics on that, Mark, but I'm sure with 650 cases, you're going
gotcha.
To, mm-hmm. we're going to have things across the board, literally everything. And we just, to get to where we were before the pandemic, you know, I know as a business person and who has salespeople out there that there are just some accounts, they don't want my salespeople even coming in yet. And it's not because they're afraid of the salespeople. They're afraid of the litigation that could come. And so they're measuring their risk and limiting opening up their businesses to pre-pandemic standards because of potential litigation.
Gotcha. So some of it might be, you know, wayward, rogue customers, and God bless customers, we all need them, who might weaponize something that happens to them, even if a company is doing due diligence, being as careful as the guidelines say, et cetera, but somebody, you know, pops up with a raging case of COVID and decides to turn it into a lottery ticket.
Well, and then the owner could be subject to, well, you didn't run this customer out, or you didn't control the environment well enough.
Lord.
And so, you know, we've been around long enough to know that pretty much anything you can think about suing about, somebody's going to file suit on it.
No, right? No, say it isn't so.
No, it is so. And that's why we need some reasonable protections within the law. And that was the intent behind this. And I am thankful that we were able to. I didn't want this to be a partisan issue because opening up our economy, protecting our businesses, you know, getting our jobs back should not be partisan. And we were very, very fortunate in the Senate to able to get bipartisan support on this issue, which I think, you know, shows you that the state of Texas is different, right? You would never have achieved that at the federal level. And we are different. And we, our economy means a lot to us. We understand that's what keeps insurance. That's what keeps people's jobs. It keeps food on the table. And that was our focus in this legislation.
It is Kelly Hancock, District 9, that sort of Northeast Tarrant, North Richland Hills-ish, mid-cities, magnificent vibe. So a couple of other minutes. Let's cover a couple of other things.
Sure.
So many states getting a lot of attention for passing legislation about the current wave of, you know, transgender stuff. A couple of things that we hear is making sure that our daughters don't have a biological male in the lane next to them at a track meet,
right.
And Arkansas, most notably, with the absolute whip coming down on these horrific surgical and hormonal procedures that block puberty. I want Texas to have all of that. How are we doing?
We're moving. And in fact, a number of those things are priorities within the Senate. And so we are at that point that you've got House bills coming over and you got Senate bills coming over. In fact, the alcohol to go bill that was so popular, the House bill is already over here. We're going to sub in, which is what we have to do in committee hearings, because we've already heard the Senate bill. We'll sub in the House bill and start moving that. So this is a point in time you're going to see some of those things start moving very, very quickly. In fact, the transgender bill is also a low bill number that the lieutenant governor put in place, which means a top priority for him
in
the Senate.
How low a number was alcohol to go?
It wasn't a very low number, but it was still very popular.
It was low for me.
Right.
No, I'm teasing. I mean, I've hated every minute of COVID. I've hated the restrictions. I've hated it. But after all the dust is settled, if I could go to Micocena's parking lot and come away with a burrito and a margarita, hey, well, at least there's a silver line.
Well, and Mark, I'll tell you, we had passed legislation for third-party delivery services.
Yeah.
And so that's when I approached the governor when this first hit, and it was easy to convince. I said, look, we've already passed legislation that allows a Grubhub and a Uber Eats to pick up a margarita with the Mexican food and deliver it to somebody. Why can't they just pick it up themselves? And that's why you saw that move so quickly, because we had already passed legislation making sure Texas was on the forefront of some of these new changes in our economy.
Exactly right. Texas Senator District 9 Kelly Hancock on the Twitter at KHancock4TX. KHancock, the numeral 4TX. Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. We always love having you on.
Yeah, God bless, Mark.
You bet. Take care. Thanks, Kelly Hancock. All righty, we are in Mansfield. Let's got room for a little call action here. Molly, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Mark, and I have to agree with you about the Mika Cena margaritas.
Exactly. Doggone it. We came away with something from this struggle.
So I am calling to say that I'm not ready to fire Ken Paxton, but I would still vote for George P. Bush, and the reason why is I think it's time to start elevating another Bush to the White House, and that's a great trajectory for him.
Okay. I can hear thousands of listeners, some of them not disparagingly, asking, why is that important?
I think it's important for two reasons. One is, whether people agree or not, I think the Bushes had a great legacy in leadership. I mean, I was raised by, you know, Reagan Republicans, so that's just kind of ingrained in me, and I'm a big believer in the Bushes. I had a great opportunity to spend 10 years with George W. and Laura Bush when they were in Austin as a reporter down there, and so I know that family, and I know what they stand for. But I agree there's people that are probably sick of them and don't agree with them, and like you said, he's a different kind of Bush. Yeah. And he might be the one that speaks to another generation.
Yeah, and to another more conservative stretch of Republican. My short book on the Bush family forever has been I So Love Them and Their Heart for Service. H.W. Bush shot himself in the foot by going back on the no new taxes pledge. A failed conservatism will always get you. I thank God that George W. was president and not John Kerry and not Al Gore. I'm glad he was president. Amen. For 9/11, et cetera, et cetera. And he did many things that I loved. There were some Swiss cheese holes in the conservatism there that were pretty big and problematic for me. And, of course, once they weren't in office anymore, it doesn't matter so much, but their absolute stone-cold hatred of Donald Trump was off-putting, and it will be forever. And again, not disqualifying or ruinous or I'm done with it. Not at all. So in George P., my question that I have is, okay, young man, who are you? In what ways do you differ? And some of those ways may be they may be important, and they may be inspiring. I guess the one thing is when you talk about the desire or the need to, quote unquote, elevate another Bush toward the White House, I could not possibly care less about what anybody's name is, what their sex is, what their race is. I care about what's in the heart, what's in the brain, what's in the mind. And if George P. passes muster on those, and if Ken Paxton has damaged goods, he could find success. Those are big ifs, but we'll see.
Agree. And, you know, but that goes back to your conversation about Prince Philip passing away and that whole legacy of the monarchy. Sure. At the end of the day, his name doesn't matter, but it still gives him some name recognition. And
no doubt.
There's a lot of people that'll support him because of that. So it helps his cause.
No doubt. Molly, thank you. Appreciate it very, very much. Mark Davis, 852. All right. So on a show where I always try to bring you a variety of views and a lot of people thinking in different ways. We've had a lot of focus yesterday and today on George P. Bush and the phenomenon by which, especially in that family, he has shown an affinity of, an actual admiration of, President Trump. Coming up next, a gentleman running in the Texas 06 congressional race who doesn't like Trump at all. Hey, they say if you can find a way to stand out, Michael Wood joins us from that race. I think it's going to be interesting. I look forward to meeting him. And other things lie ahead in our 9 o'clock hour. So a little George Winston tickling the ivories on our way out. And 2 hours down, one to go on this Friday, April 9th. Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Stick around.